My guest today, Dr. Philip Kaper, practices internal medicine in Bangor, Maine. He received his BA, MS, and MD degrees at UCLA and trained in internal medicine on the Harvard Medical Unit at Boston City Hospital. He has held professorships at Dartmouth Medical School and the University of Massachusetts Medical School, where he was also Vice Chancellor for Health Affairs, Chief of the Medical Staff, and Hospital Director. He has been an adjunct lecturer on health policy and management at the Harvard School of Public Health, a research associate at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, and associate in health policy and management at the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. From 1971 to 1976, he was a professional staff member on the United States Senate Labor and Human Resources Subcommittee on Health, chaired by the late Senator Ted Kennedy. Dr. Kaper was a charter member of the nation's top health care advisory panel, the National Council on Health Planning and Development, from 1977 to 1984, chairing that panel from 1980 to 1984. He is also a founding member of the National Academy of Social Insurance and is a founding board member of Maine All Care, the Maine chapter of Physicians for National Health Program, and serves on its National Board of Directors. He has published numerous articles in professional journals and written many letters to the editor and op-ed articles advocating for a publicly run universal health care program. He writes a regular column on health issues for the Bangor, Maine Daily News, so when it comes to the issue of health care, Dr. Kaper knows whatever he speaks. Welcome to Takes on the World, Dr. Philip Kaper.
Well, thank you very much.
Glad to have you here on these days. President Obama, the beleaguered President Obama, said on Monday that there was, quote, no excuse for the technical glitches that had made the rollout of his health insurance plan something of a disaster, and he promised once again that all Americans would have access to health care under the law. Even without the sign-up problems, you have written, and others have, in the media have confirmed the reports, that a significant number of Americans will not be eligible for government assistance under the program and will find it anything but affordable. Perhaps you could comment on that.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, even if the ACA, known by some of its detractors as Obamacare, worked perfectly, about 25 to 30 million Americans would still not be able to access health insurance. Low-income Americans, undocumented Americans, and so on and so forth. So even if it worked perfectly, it wouldn't. It's not a universal health care program. In fact, it's a program that really lacks any policy coherence. I mean, I've written and I've said that I fully support the intent of the act, and quite frankly, I admire President Obama and particularly Speaker Pelosi for taking on this very tough issue. The American healthcare system cries out for reform, and they were able to take it on, even though they knew it would be a political hot potato. Although I don't think they realized quite how hot it would be, shutting down the government over it, for example. But it reminds me of how I heard a helicopter once described as a collection of spare parts flying in loose formation. It was a bill that was written by the Congress. President Obama gave the Congress enormous leeway in writing this bill, too much in my view, but he didn't want to repeat the experience that the Clintons had in trying to get health reform passed, so he sort of let the Congress write it. And the Congress is a much better editor than it is an author. So when you let the Congress author a bill, Congress is composed of 535 members with very different agendas and ideologies and so on. What you end up with is what we used to call a Christmas tree when I worked in the Senate. And that is everybody puts their favorite ideas on it, sort of hangs it like ornaments on a Christmas tree, but there's no real coherence to it. It doesn't fit together. I would have much preferred to see a simple expansion of Medicare, perhaps done in phases over time, to the entire American population. I think we wouldn't have seen any of these startup problems.
Well, you mentioned that the critics of Obamacare or affordable health care are the same people, of course, have criticized all government programs. And even going back to Ronald Reagan, who actually ran against the government openly, that Medicare and Social Security have actually shown that the government can do a good job.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Medicare and Social Security are the leading factor keeping seniors out of poverty over the last 40 years. Medicare works well, although it could certainly stand to be improved, particularly in the area of controlling overall costs. But again, the reason Medicare has not been more effective in controlling costs is because Congress keeps getting in the way of them doing it. So, for example, when the drug benefit was added to Medicare in 2003, the Medicare program was prohibited from negotiating prices with the pharmaceutical companies, which is standard procedure in every other wealthy country in the world. So every time Medicare tries to get tough with either the fraudsters or the people who are just overcharging for their services, somebody in Congress representing the district that particular individual lives in screams and Medicare has to back off. Having said that, however, Medicare still has lower operating costs, that is overhead, about 5%, compared to private insurance companies, which routinely run 20% or more. So that's, and it also does a better price of bargaining prices down. It does a better job of bargaining prices down than the private insurers do. So Medicare has a lot going for it. It could be improved, but it's by far the most efficient and effective program we have in medical care.
One of the things that when Obama launched the program, despite the fact that polls before he became elected president showed, as I recall, that the American public overwhelmingly supported a single-payer health system, that the insurance companies would be taken care of, that their support for this program was essential, and that they had like a veto power over certain aspects of the program. And it seems to me that there's no other developed country in the world in which insurance companies play such a role in delivery of health care. Are you aware of anything comparable to this?
No, I'm not. Insurance companies do play a role in other countries. Germany, Holland, Switzerland are examples. However, they're nothing like our for-profit, publicly traded insurance companies. They are essentially regulated public utilities. They're told who to pay, how much to pay, when to pay, what to pay for, and so on. So they don't have the kind of flexibility our insurance companies do to pursue profits. We have to understand something about what's happened to the health insurance industry in the past 10 or 15 years. It used to be dominated by not-for-profit plans like the Blue Cross and Blue Shield plans. But over the last decade or so, the industry has largely converted to for-profit, large national publicly traded companies. And what you have to understand about a publicly traded company is that stock price and profitability are king. They are the mission of a publicly traded for-profit company, that is, providing wealth for their owners. That's very different from Medicare, which is a social insurance program whose mission is to facilitate medical care for its beneficiaries. The private companies, in their pursuit of profit and maximizing profitability, actually impair the delivery of medical care. They fight with the doctors, they fight with patients, they deny claims, they try to dump patients they think are sick or at risk of becoming sick. That's because they're simply doing their job. They're creating wealth for their owners, and they're doing a very good job of carrying out that mission. And that mission for a private insurance company trumps the healthcare mission. And that's the fundamental flaw. So even though the overhead of insurance companies is a big problem, their incentives to avoid sick people and to avoid paying claims if one of their beneficiaries does get ill is baked into their business model. They can't really change that. Now, a lot of their most egregious abuses, such as throwing people off of their insurance once they become sick, a widespread practice called rescission, which is now outlawed, incidentally, by the ACA, the incentives to find ways to do that are still there. So it's going to be a constant tug of war between the insurance companies and the regulators to try to keep them from behaving what is actually in their own best interest, which is to maximize profitability. That's why I prefer a nonprofit social insurance model like Medicare. And another reason is because it's much simpler. I mean, it's very complicated and will be very expensive to run this program because of its complexity. Thousands of insurance companies, lots of marketplaces or exchanges and all that sort of thing. So that's one of the reasons. The other reason is because it's going to be very difficult to generate widespread public support because, you know, the government haters aside, the ordinary citizen, it's just too complicated for them to understand. If they don't understand it, it's going to be hard to get a lot of support for it until it's been running for a while and some people have seen the benefits. And finally, because it slices and dices people into so many different categories, you know, we still have Medicaid, we still have Medicare, we have the VA, we have all kinds of different levels of subsidy, different plans, bronze, gold, silver, that sort of thing. It's fundamentally unfair in the way it's financed and in the way its benefits are distributed because of different people who have the same kinds of needs for medical care are treated very differently simply by the dint of their age or their geographic location or their health care history or some other thing that should have nothing to do with whether people get medical care.
Well, you know, we've heard a lot about the military-industrial complex, but you write on October 17th, you say that politics is the only credible reason for retaining the complex and confusing web of private insurance plans, that the Affordable Care Act had to first accommodate the interest of the corporate medical industrial complex, putting the interests of the American people in a distant second place. And Congress's approval rating, of course, now hovers around 5%. But it doesn't seem like Congress really cares.
Well, they don't care because the voters don't punish them for acting on behalf of these large corporations instead of on behalf of their constituents. And that has to change, in my view. I think both voters have to begin paying attention to whose interest their congressperson is supporting. And if they don't support the interests of most of their constituents, out they go, in my view. I mean, that's the only thing politicians are more afraid of than their large campaign contributors are the voters. And the voters can get their attention by simply refusing to go along with what they're trying to do if they're not acting in the interest of their constituents. And, you know, I'd advise your listeners, if you don't know about the medical industrial complex, read the cover story in the March 4th Time magazine by Stephen Brill. It's called Bitter Pill. And what Brill does brilliantly is just to go through a bunch of hospital bills line by line and figure out where's the money going. Follow the money. And what we find is that there's just blatant and, in my view, inexcusable price gouging going on, that most people who get medical bills, or, you know, when you get your hospital bills, it's all in code. You have no way of understanding what that means. You have no way of knowing whether the tests and procedures and products are really necessary or not. You have no way to compare prices. I mean, markets simply don't work in healthcare simply because the sellers, that is the hospitals, the drug companies, the medical device companies, and even the doctors, have much more information than the buyers do, that is the patients. So the buyer doesn't stand a chance. And Steve Brill sort of lays this out absolutely brilliantly. And he makes the case that Medicare does the best job of any program in controlling prices and dealing with some of the price gouging. I don't think they do a good enough job for the reasons I've mentioned before, but they're better than any other company. Because the commercial insurance companies basically take a percent of their gross. So the more cash goes through the insurance company, the more money they make. So they don't have much of an incentive to really crack down on prices. They kind of shadow price. And that's all the more reason to have a publicly managed nonprofit method of financing healthcare, which is the norm in every other country in the world, which every other wealthy country.
Well, I noticed a year ago I spent 8 days in the hospital in San Francisco, and the bill for the hospital, I have Medicare, the bill for the hospital started out at $262,000 just for the
right.
hospital, and I asked for a itemized bill, and it reads like the Defense Department bill. The prices for certain things were so outrageous that it'd be something for Saturday Night Live and Jon Stewart to open his eyes wide. But Medicare negotiated it down to $71,000.
Right. That's probably too high anyway, but, you know, that's another problem.
but they got much more than the doctors did out of this, who actually was taking care of me. But I look at these bills, and it's just extraordinary. As you mentioned, the average person has no idea what to look for when they're purchasing health insurance. And they and they have these huge booklets and fine print set out. Even President Obama pretends that people will have a choice, but this requires some kind of expert opinion, which the average citizen doesn't have.
Well, they need an expert opinion even to get enrolled in Obamacare. It's so complicated getting enrolled that they have these navigators to help people get into the program. I mean, they recognize that this was far... You know, it's actually a pretty ugly piece of public policy. I mean, I admire the attempt and the kind of the chutzpah it took to take this problem on. But as a piece of public policy, it's pretty hard to understand. And, you know, the outrageous prices would actually be funny if it weren't for the fact that the people least able to pay them get billed the sticker price. And they have to then wrestle with the hospital to try to bargain it down to something even remotely manageable. So if you don't have any insurance and you're paying your hospital bill out of pocket, they'll charge you the $200,000, and then you're left at the mercy of the hospital to bargain it down to some more reasonable figure. But they'll come after you. I mean, medical bills are the leading cause of personal bankruptcy in this country, and that's, to me, is just a moral disgrace. I mean, I think one person going bankrupt for medical reasons is a disgrace, but we have roughly 60,000-70,000 people a year or more going bankrupt as a result of medical bills.
And yet the propaganda against a national health insurance has become so strong that you have people who would benefit from national health care opposing it because they've been told it's socialized medicine. The president is a Muslim and a socialist, and the government is taking over our lives.
Yeah, that's right. Well, when I hear the term socialized medicine bandied about, I basically stop listening because that person either doesn't understand what they're talking about or is deliberately trying to stop the conversation. They do know what they're talking about, and it's intended to just stop the conversation. Nobody in this country is proposing socialized medicine. Now, we're proposing social insurance, but Medicare buys medical services from private doctors and hospitals. Socialized medicine, the VA is socialized medicine, which actually, as it turns out, is a pretty good system these days. It's improved a lot in the last decade or so. But nobody is seriously proposing that the government take over the doctors and hospitals. That's just nonsense. And anybody who says that ought to be disregarded because they don't know what they're talking about or they're dissembling.
Where is the American Medical Association on this? What role has it been playing regarding Obamacare or affordable health care?
Well, the American Medical Association is kind of on the fence. They're sort of in favor of universal health care, but I think by and large they're opposed as a national organization to a single-payer, we call it a single-payer program, that is Medicare for all. Now, that's changing. Here in Maine, a survey was done of all the doctors in the state that belong to the Maine Medical Association, and 55% of them, this is 4 years ago, said that they preferred a single-payer program, that is Medicare for all, to the private insurance industry. The doctors are so fed up dealing with the hassle the private insurers impose on them that they would prefer to just have everybody on Medicare if, you know, they complain about what they consider to be low reimbursement rates. Although, you know, the average primary care doctor here in Maine makes $150,000 to $180,000 a year, and that actually looks pretty good in a state where the average family income is about $40,000. So, you know, I think things are changing, and I think that physicians are beginning to come around to preferring single payer. And one of the major reasons is that there's no country in the world where medical decisions are interfered with and micromanaged to anywhere near the extent we have in the United States. And for some reason, American physicians seem to have been willing to put up with it. But I can only imagine what would happen if the French government tried to micromanage French doctors. I mean, they'd be out on the street the next day protesting this. And I think we may be getting close to that here in the United States. Well, but, you know, the single-payer system makes sense on so many levels. In other countries, every other country has a system which covers everybody, I mean everybody in the country, and gets better outcomes than we do. That's the hard evidence. Is more popular with their public and with their politicians than ours is. And, oh, yes, by the way, costs on average about half as much as we're spending. And Americans have to understand that when you get sick in any of these other countries, you don't think about money. And Americans have trouble wrapping our minds around that concept or even believing it because it differs so markedly from the financial hassles that we have to put up with at every stage of the game in our healthcare system. So I think we can do a lot better.
Well, one of the things, you asked a question in our article you wrote August 15th, which can be found on the Physicians for National Health Program website you wrote for the Bangor Maine News. Where is the outrage over our failed healthcare system? And you don't blame, while you're not letting the companies off the hook, you're asking, what about the public? Where is the public's outrage? And it's a really good question. Maybe you could elaborate on that.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that, as I say, people have to begin making this a voting issue. I think people are discouraged. I think they're intimidated. And I think they feel increasingly powerless. I think they believe the government doesn't act in their interest, but they don't know what to do with it. That's why the congressional approval rating is around 5%. And I don't think that's accurate. I mean, my experience in Washington and since then has been that politicians respond if they think voters are going to make an issue of whatever they're doing. And I think voters underestimate their own power. But they have to step up to the plate and simply send the message that this is not acceptable. And if you want to retain your job in Washington, you better start acting on behalf of most of your constituents. That's what has to happen.
Well, on a different subject, amazingly, the Obama administration was about to launch some air attacks on Syria, but the polls across the country and across party lines showed the overwhelming majority of the public was against the United States attacking Syria for a variety of reasons, as I say, crossing party lines, but this so reached the members of Congress that they were ready to vote down an attack when President Obama was going to go before Congress and ask for an authorization. This was like unprecedented in my lifetime.
And right. Well, I think that's a very good sign. It shows people are beginning to pay attention. But, you know, the public understands going to war. I mean, after our experience in Afghanistan and Iraq, to say nothing of Vietnam, people are not quite as anxious to go to war as they once were. And I think that the administration itself was pretty ambivalent about this. This was not something that cried out for fixing because there wasn't any clear plan about what would happen the day after you go to war. And I think that's one lesson they've learned from Iraq and Afghanistan. You have to have an exit strategy. The healthcare situation is a little bit different. First of all, it's not as clear. There's so much disinformation out there about what healthcare reform would mean and how it works in other countries, that most Americans are just not tuned into it in the way they are in questions of war and peace. And, you know, so I think that, and of course there's the money. the health care, what I call the medical industrial complex, spends four times as much as the military industrial complex on lobbying in Washington, four times as much. So it's a much more potent lobby than even the defense industry. And, you know, we just have to, you know, the people, the voters of this country have to mobilize enough to defeat the power of these very wealthy and prosperous industries, which I think are the underlying problem in this country. I think it's a lot about the money here.
Well, that's what they say, follow the money. One thing that's always troubled me is the role of the AFL-CIO, even when it was more powerful, in not pushing for single payer. And the idea, I am very anti-corporate, but I personally don't believe it's the job of businesses, large or small, to be responsible for the health care of their employees. I think this is a public responsibility. How do you see that?
Well, I tend to agree with you. I mean, I'm not anti-corporate either, because I guess you said you were anti-corporate, but I'm not as anti. I mean, I think corporations are fine, and I think they do great things. And I believe in wealth creation. I believe in capitalism, but I don't believe in capitalism run amok, which is what we now have. Capitalism has to be constrained. It has, and it is in almost every other wealthy country. For example, in Canada or Britain or any of the other wealthy countries, the drug prices are bargained down by the government. They don't mind doing that, and these companies continue to do business in those countries. So they're still making money. They're just not making as much. So we have to learn to put appropriate constraints around the corporations, and that is a failure of public policy. That's not a failure of the corporations. They're just doing what they do, and they're going to do as much of it as they can. It's our responsibility as a matter of public policy to put boundaries around them so they don't become destructive, as the health insurance companies have, by essentially shunning sick people.
Go to the first caller.
Hi. Something your guest just said about the way the insurance micromanages health care gave me a thought that I'm old enough to remember when there was actually somewhat of a debate about socialism versus capitalism, when it wasn't just a swear word or something, and a rational debate occurred to some extent. And one of the criticisms of a socialist system was that it was overly bureaucratic, and that the advantage of capitalism is that the market sort of decentralized the decision making down to the level where it made more sense. And that rang a bell with me when you were talking about the insurance companies micromanaging. It sounds like a form of hyper-bureaucracy that used to be a criticism of socialism, but it's here in the capitalist healthcare system. It's just a comment. Thank you very much.
Well, yeah, I'll respond to that. It's the private insurance companies are far more bureaucratic than Medicare is. Ask any doctor or any other provider who deals with both Medicare and the private companies. In fact, the biggest department in any private insurance company is the underwriting department, which has determined how much to charge you based upon your health history, your age, your location, whatever, and also denies claims and tries to get rid of people who are not going to be profit centers, that is, people who are likely to use medical care. In fact, what insurance companies call payments to doctors and hospitals is their medical loss. And that makes a lot of sense from the point of view of the corporation. I mean, they lose money by paying medical bills, so they try not to do it. But it makes no sense from the point of view of a healthcare system, because medical bills, paying medical bills, is what Medicare, for example, is all about. And so the private business model, you know, they're not bad people. They're just doing what they do. Much of the problem is that we're letting them do it, and that's got to change.
Has there been, getting back to the question, is there any public support for single payer on the part of labor, organized labor, outside of individuals?
Yeah, you asked a question about labor.
Yeah.
Labor, with some unions have been enthusiastic single-payer supporters. I think of the UAW, for example, back in the 70s. The larger unions, the AFL-CIO, for example, have always been somewhat ambivalent about it because health care was a powerful organizing tool for the labor unions. You know, one of the things they could say they could do for you is to get you good health care benefits. And by and large, the strong unions have succeeded in doing that. And they've built up these Taft-Hartley trust funds, which are health and welfare trust funds, which they enjoy managing for a variety of reasons. But what's happened recently is, first of all, the unions are much less powerful than they once were. And second, the workforce has changed. So they now have many more retirees per worker than they did 20 or 30 years ago. And that puts their financial model on its head because they can no longer support the retirees with a smaller number of working members. And that means that the working members are going to have to contribute more and more to the pool, and they're in a death spiral. So the unions, as of the past several years, have become much more enthusiastic about dumping the whole problem on the government, which I think is fine. And I think the business community should do that also. Here in Maine, many, many small business owners would like nothing better than to just get rid of the whole headache because it's a distraction for them. It's expensive. It's contentious. They're having to push more and more of the cost off on their employees, which they really don't like to do. So they'd like to just get out of the whole thing. And I think that there's a growing movement within the business community which would support a government-managed insurance program such as Medicare for All.
Well, now that we have, actually, the White House is now calling the Affordable Care Act Obamacare. I got an email from the White House the other day referring to it as Obamacare. So I guess they'll take the credit if it works. But for those of us who support single payer, is this a step forward or a step backward? Will it be harder, in your mind, to switch to a single payer at some point, or will the experience of the American public be so bad on this one that they'll reject any new suggestion about changing the healthcare program?
Well, I think on balance, it's probably a step forward in some ways because it does try to curb the more egregious and abusive practices of the private insurance industry. It does have some very weak cost containment mechanisms that are just beginning to be put in place that I think are inadequate and are not going to do the job. But it does try to do that, and it does provide insurance for quite a large number of additional people through federal subsidies and through an expansion of Medicaid, although that was supposed to be much greater than it turns out to be because of the Supreme Court decision making it an optional expansion. But I think it does some destructive things, too. It also amounts to a huge corporate bailout, corporate welfare for the health insurance industry. But I think the most important thing it's done is to really destabilize the existing system. And I think that's a good thing because that provides an opportunity to change things. I don't think the Congress is going to want to revisit this issue in any broad-scale way anytime soon. There's just too much political pain involved. But there is a provision in the Affordable Care Act that allows individual states to get a waiver from the provisions of the Affordable Care Act if they show they can replace it at a state level with something that costs no more and provides at least as many and preferably more benefits. And that's what Vermont has begun to do. Vermont passed a law saying we want to go to what's very much like a single-payer system, and we're going to do it. And these waivers kick in 2017, so between now and then, they're going to try to do that. And we're going to be trying to do the same thing. We're advocating that here in Vermont at the state level. So that's a way the Affordable Care Act provides a path to a Medicare for All type system.
We're just coming down to the end of the hour. How would people get more information about the Physicians for National Healthcare Program?
Well, you can go to their website, which is pnhp.org, or you can go to the Maine All Care website, which is, again, Maine All Care, one word, mainallcare.org. And we have a lot of information between those two websites. There's a great deal of very good information about the pros and cons of various approaches. And, you know, we come down saying, Medicare for All is the simplest, the easiest to understand. Medicare is quite popular among the public, and even among the politicians. Even the Republicans are standing up and defending it, assuring people that nobody's going to cut their Medicare. But there needs to be a lot of public education. You know, these rallies that said people were saying, keep the government's hands off my Medicare, shows that they don't really understand exactly what's going on.
I won't quote H.L. Mencken here.
Yeah, exactly.
Dr. Philip Kaper, I want to thank you very much for being our guest today on Takes on the World, and continue with your good work, and let's hope we get that single payer.
Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.